This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. It's still across there. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
No more Coco, leave the old 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. All of this to me is a mystery. I hear your motherfuckers talk about it. But I stay seeing bodies with the motherfucking chalk around it.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. Coming to you live here on this Wednesday evening. Beautiful weather we've been having in the Northeast. Outside of some rain today, but it's been tremendous. And, of course, it rained because we can't have absolutely perfect weather for our guest tonight. That's never possible, right, Scott Criscola?
Absolutely not, JR. Pleasure as always, sir. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 313 of the Place to Be podcast. And of course, I feel pretty good because it is summertime, and the reason it is because we had a typical Northeast thunderstorm just kind of come through here and, you know, wreak havoc with rain and everything, and then it was gone and the sun came out. So I don't know if that storm got to you yet, but I know it might be coming shortly. So,
no, I am annoyed, though, because my dryer is not drying, so now I have to decide that awful, gut-wrenching decision. Do you call a repairman and try and fix it, or do you just bite the bullet and get a new one? So that's where I'm going to be agonizing over tomorrow.
Mm. Well, dryers are... Well, I mean, depends where you go.
It's 10 years old.
Okay.
Okay, so I know that much. So I'm debating, is it worth spending, you know, $400 to $500 between repair and parts and everything, or just get a new one that I know will be brand new? So that's a decision that we need to go ahead and make in the next day or so, but we'll decide. So, Scott, we do have a very special guest with us tonight. Before we bring him in, though, why don't we just quickly talk about what's going on at PlaceToBeNation.com the last few days?
Yes.
Is that a good idea?
Absolutely. Dive in.
All right. Today, you and I posted our new Vintage Vault written review for No Mercy 2008. I think we can call it 2008 with the way we cranked out these last two shows.
Yes.
I don't think we've done two in 2 weeks and probably... 6 years, 7 years, but Unforgiven was up last week. No Mercy up this week. Great story up today by Charles Williams, who is from Pro Wrestling Only Message Board. He's one of the administrators there. Did a story about Jerry Lawler and the Snowman from Memphis, a rare racial angle done with a touch of class and very nuanced and sophisticated. So that's a great read, a lengthy read. It made Dave Meltzer's update today, so... go ahead and check that out by Charles. It's on the front page right now. You won't be disappointed spending 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so reading that, or 20 if you're our guest tonight. It takes a little bit longer. But our World Cup previews began. Todd Gessling looking at groups A and B, and he'll have all the groups up over the next couple days leading up to the World Cup in Brazil this year. An excellent new episode of the Pro Wrestling Super Show. That's Stephen Graham's podcast, joined by our buddy Chad Campbell from Where the Big Boys Play, and Dylan from Wrestling Culture. And they tell you why you should be watching Lucha, Scott. I think you need to listen to this. And Chad calls you out in this. He uses you as his baseline, basically, saying if Scott Criscola doesn't know about it, then you know that's like the baseline wrestling fan. So I think you got beef with Chad. I want to hear you guys toss that out there and go at it.
Okay. Sure.
Russell Sellers scored a very nice interview on the comic staff with Allison Sampson, the artist for Genesis comic book, and you can go ahead and check that out. So, a very good interview by Russell there. Scott, yesterday, the birthday of the late great Notorious B.I.G. would have been 42.
Yes,
one of my favorite artists. I paid tribute to him with some of my memories in a piece that was up yesterday, and you'll hear some of his music on the show tonight. Of course, this is meant to be recorded yesterday on his birthday, so I'm gonna have a few songs for you in and out of the breaks and closing for you.
And on a side note, JR, for those that have never seen it, and I'm a biopic junkie, I highly recommend seeing Notorious, which was the Biggie biopic. I thought it was very, very well done.
Of course, it was. A very enjoyable movie. Glenn Butler took you on his Wednesday walk around the web, as always, with some intriguing, titillating links that may amuse you or thought-provoking for you to enjoy during your work day. The Bauer Show, episode 22, talked about, have we reached the end of CC Sabathia? I don't think we're quite at the end, but we may be nearing it. And also, they discussed some Max Scherzer hatred that's out there. Speaking of the Yankees, Masahiro Tanaka was the newest subject of Joel Barnhart and his player profile. And Joel, I think, jinxed him because he posted the stupid article and then he lost his first game. So I'm blaming Joel for that one solely. Nate Impact. I'm going to call him that from now on. Nate Milton had his Impact review. And the Kings of Sport had their newest episode as well. They're all back together talking Michael Sam, talking about their car issues that have been going on, and, of course, everything else going on in the world of sports. Roger Morissette was back in the classroom looking at celebrity matches, took a look at three of the most famous ones, broke them down from the eyes of the novice that is Roger Morissette. Russell Sellers had his newest comic picks. We had your Raw recap, and, of course, our Place to Be podcast episode from Monday night. We brought in Scott Keith. Did a great mailbag. Now, Scott, you may have heard, we have some podcasts here at Place to Be Nation.
A couple.
Yeah, just a few. So not Besides only us. Do we have ours, we also feature, and you can go to placebynation.com. On the right-hand side, there's a handy-dandy, big-ass logo, P2B Podcasts. You click that, you can see all of them in their glory. We have our show. We have the Kevin Kelly Show. We have the Steve Carino Show. That comes at you every Friday morning right there for you for the weekend. Place to Be Nation's main event. That's you and a roundtable panel every other week that break down the current landscape in wrestling. Place to Be Network specials. Those usually occur after every pay-per-view with Will and the gang. He'll have some of his guys, some of our guys, and you break down the pay-per-view instant reaction style. We have the Extra Point. That's you and Dr. G looking at the world of sports every other week. And we have a new sports podcast coming as well, which we'll talk about next week. Titans of Wrestling, one of the best shows we offer here on PlaceToBeNation.com. Parv and Kelly and Johnny Sorrow and Pete look at the world of the WWWF from the late 70s and early 80s, and also check out some other territories of the day. Chad and Parv, where the big boys play, going chronologically through the history of the NWA and WCW. I mentioned before Stephen Graham's Pro Wrestling Super Show, where they kind of, it's like the PWI of Place to Be Nation. They kind of pick a unique, specific topic and dive into it each week. WrestleNomics with Chris Harrington looks at the business side of wrestling. This past weekend, he looked at the new network deal, and we'll have a lot to say about that, I'm sure, on our shows over the next week or so. The Bauer Show, formerly of ESPN Radio, now here on PlaceToBeNation.com, hosted by Michael Bauer and our buddy Jeff Peck. Also, the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton and Big Nasty. And
Nate Impact.
Yes, Nate Impact and the crew there. Wrestling Culture, Wrestling of the Past, Goodwill Wrestling, and all the others, Still Real to Us, Richard and the Mailman, all there for you. In all their glory on the Place to Be Nation podcast page. You can sign up on our feed on iTunes, and you can listen through all the shows through there as well. So be sure to check that out. You can email us if you have any questions, info@placetobenation.com, facebook.com/placetobenation, and at Twitter, place2bnation. So, Scott, why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we'll bring in our special guest of honor, and we'll go back in time 12 years.
Because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Carino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Carino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Carino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. And a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast. So you better not miss it because I'm on it.
All right, Nation, we are back, and joining us now is our special guest in the evening. You may know him from a couple places. One would be Ring of Honor Television, where he's the voice, the lead play-by-play man. You may know him from your days watching World Wrestling Entertainment / Federation back in the day, as he was humiliated weekly on that TV show. You may know him from the Place to Be podcast, where he's with us every, couple months or so, talking old school WWE, breaking down the years that he was there for us. Or you may know him from his own podcast, The Kevin Kelly Show, which he co-hosts along with me. And, of course, he's there every other week at PlaceToBeNation.com. The one, the only, the great Kevin Kelly. Kevin, welcome back to the Place to Be podcast.
Whatever. Scott, let me ask you a question. You've worked with this guy for how many shows?
This is our 313th.
How have you not choked him? I've done nine, and it's awful.
I'm surprised, Kev, because him and I share the billing on this show, so we have to equally jab each other. But your name's in the title, so you should be able to have a little more.
I don't ever say anything, do I? He just throws shot after shot after shot at me.
You think Scott would be able to choke me too, since I'm carrying him on my back through all these things?
Yeah, exactly. Because your sense of humor is unbelievably amazing, and
thank you.
Because, you know, 313 episodes of my old jokes means you really have nothing else.
Wow, there's just so much material.
Well, I'm glad that I can carry these podcasts.
right down to your back aching as you were standing up.
Exactly,
tonight.
Because my needing me to carry
the show. All right, Kevin, tell us about the Kevin Kelly Show. What can we hear?
Well, Kevin, tell us about the Kevin Kelly Show.
Well, yes. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for asking. Yes, with my producer, Justin, the Miguel Olivo of podcasting. Again,
I'll bite you, bitch.
It has been it's a lot of fun. We sort of take a non-traditional slant, I'd like to think, towards the wrestling podcast, and we bring some of the human element of what we're doing in the business to light. And like our most recent guest, Diamond Dallas Page, of course, we didn't talk anything about his in-ring career. We talked all about his yoga, and we talked everything that he's doing away from the ring. And sort of every guest that we've had has something to do with wrestling, but has something to do with real life. Celtics play-by-play man Sean Grandy is going to be our next guest. I'm working on, I just have to contact him. Stevie Richards will be a guest in a few shows after that. And, so it's just been a lot of fun. And you can listen to it every other week. We do a new episode. Episode 10 comes up next Wednesday. We'll record it. And if I don't kill Justin between now and then, it'll be a good show.
You know what's funny?
If you do kill me, you'd be completely lost and have no show.
But you know what's funny? You know what's funny, Kev? You called him executive producer. He said co-host.
Yeah,
so
I know.
What's going to be now? The Kevin Kelly / Justin Rosero show? Is that what
No. It's the Kevin Kelly show. I am the host. And he's
like
the producer. Right. He's Ed McMahon. I'm Johnny Carson.
I'm pretty sure Ed McMahon was just drunk in the back, not putting the whole show together.
And who's Doc Severinsen? Biggie? Kevin knows who he is, at least. You don't know any.
Of course.
You don't know any show before 1993.
Stump the Band? It was great. They had great bits back then.
If we say that one of Johnny's guests was Muggsy Bogues, then Justin would know what we're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, Muggsy. Charlotte Hornets are back. Oh, God, I'm pumped.
New color scheme, but the same logo, yeah.
I like the logo, too.
It looks awesome.
I don't know. I'll tell you something. I don't think they're going to bring the pinstripes back, though. I do think they'll bring the teal. Well, obviously the teal's back. I don't think they'll bring back the pinnies, though.
They may for like they'll probably be like the third jersey because you know they're trying to cash in.
Well, is it a different? I thought it was blue and silver, not the teal like they used to have. The one logo I saw, it might be a different one. I don't know.
No, the base color I think is still.
They just brought back the same old the old logo.
No, I'm sure it'll be slightly different because they're not going to copy probably exactly. Remember, for a while, they also had the alternate purple jerseys there for a bit, too. But we'll see
what
they come back
with.
That might
have been what I saw. It's exciting.
Yeah, oh, I'm pumped. I'm all in. Back in on my Hornets. It's been 12 years of missing them.
Of being a gypsy.
We're back. Bring back Muggsy. Bring back Zoe. All right, Kevin, are you ready to dive back into early 2002? We last left off after Vengeance, and early 02 is quite the half year in the World Wrestling Federation / Entertainment, as it would become to be known. Upheaval month after month, new faces, old faces, name changes, brand splits. We got a lot to get to. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready. There was a lot of changes this year, but it's all good.
Okay, cool. All right, Scott, why don't you start us off?
Of course. Kevin has been very nice to me in these first few minutes, but that's all going to change with this first question.
Ah.
As you know, Kevin, on January 7th at Madison Square Garden on Monday Night Raw, Triple H made his big, tremendous return after the 8 months of, or 9 months, I guess JR used to say, of rehabilitation from the torn quad. Your feelings on his return, how the locker room felt, just the general mood of the company when he came back in January.
I thought I may have been in the minority on this in the company. I thought his return was really well done, and I liked it a lot. He came back massive, just way too big. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's a byproduct of not having too much to do other than lift weights. So,
and only his upper body. He couldn't do anything with his legs, obviously, so he did a lot of, obviously, you know, upper body lifting.
Right, and was gigantic. Yeah. I loved the video. I thought the use of the beautiful day I thought was really neat. I thought it was great. And I just remember like talking to Michael Cole, who was like, oh, I hated it. It sucked. And I somebody else, oh yeah, it was tough. Jeez. And I was like, really? I thought it was good. I think everybody was that was one of those returns that sort of snuck onto the radar because there were so many people in the locker room right now at this time. The locker room was still jam-packed. Mm-hmm. That Hunter's return kind of felt like, well, okay, you know, it's, you know, one more bag. We got to find one more spot for one more guy because we're about at capacity right now.
Mm-hmm. Made sense. What was the thoughts of the new guys, like the WCW guys, the Bookers and that kind of stuff? Because they didn't really know Hunter that well. When they came in, he was out. So what were their specifically their thoughts, the Bookers and the Lance Storms and like the WCW guys, the post-invasion guys or whoever that was still sticking around? What were their thoughts?
I don't think that there was too much negativity overall, other than I think that all wrestlers – by nature, are very paranoid. And when some other top guy comes in who has a knack for politicking, I think maybe some of them thought, well, this is great. You know, now it's another guy who's going to be angling for whatever spot we're trying to hang on to. But none of that was really outwardly expressed. And, you know, I wasn't of the opinion to try to go around and ask the pot-stirring questions to guys who were, you know, that I was generally new getting to know and were probably feeling paranoid. Hey, what do you think about Hunter coming back, huh? Mm-hmm. So I don't remember there being a true negative vibe. There might have been, but it was underlying because it wasn't I'm trying to think of if there was an ever return when I was there that everybody hated it and it sucked and they didn't want to see it. Other than the Jericho, which we had talked about before, about how a lot of folks were down on Jericho coming in. And I thought it was cool. So I don't know. I like it when guys come back. I thought it was neat. The crowd was very receptive. Perfect spot for it in the garden. And mm-hmm. A long road back for him from a terrible injury.
Mm-hmm. All right. So also early in the year, we had new tag team champions. Taz and Spud Dudley were teamed up. And they won the belts from the Dudleys. Was this just a mix-up what had become kind of a stagnant tag division? And it was cool originally. They were the underdogs. They stole the titles. They worked that way. And then they kept winning and kept winning and kept winning and didn't lose them until almost the end of February. Do you think the underdog thing kind of went on too long and they just became another team but didn't really work like another team? Any memories of them as a champions?
I think maybe it was more like, wait, they still have the belts? What? We haven't taken the belts off them yet? We'll get to it next week. And then three more weeks go by. What? They still have the belts. Nothing during this era, we have to remember, nothing of this era was really planned out long term. There may have been ideas long term, but nothing was written in stone. It was all week to week, and it all was on the whim of Vince. Mm-hmm. Do you think, doesn't matter who the champions are, do you think, Vince, this is a good week to switch the tag team belts? And he would feel the whole rest of the show. No, hold it off for another week. Okay. Could have been, you know, Dean Ho and Tony Garea we would be talking about. Doesn't matter. He's not concerned with the name. just with the idea. Mm-hmm. So that may have been the reason why they hung on to the belts as long as they did. It didn't feel like an underdog thing that had overstayed its welcome. That was kind of Spike Dudley's thing. And I think internally, a lot of us were happy that he and Taz were getting to do something of substance.
What did you think of Taz's run? Because it pretty much comes to an end after this tag team title reign. He starts transitioning more into the commentary booth. Of course, he was doing Sunday Night Heat and then would take over doing SmackDown eventually. Do you think it was a wise move for him? And it's kind of, what are your thoughts overall of his run as a wrestler? Disappointing? Or do you think he pretty much hit the ceiling of where he was going anyway?
I think he had hit the ceiling of where he was going to go in that company in that time. Very competitive landscape. The time to make the transition away from the ring was right, and he did it very well. I think Taz maximized the investment that he had made in his body, had gone further and done more than probably most had ever given him the thought of doing. And when it was time for him to make that transition to the booth, I thought he did an excellent job.
All right, so we head to Atlanta for the Royal Rumble. Let's talk about that Vince Flair street fight. Do you think that they jumped that quickly? Maybe could have done it at Mania? Do you think that was the right spot for it? And were you surprised at how actually pretty good it was?
No, actually, I wasn't surprised at how good it was. I think one of the reasons they didn't do it at Mania is because of all the blood, right? It's going to be a lot of blood in that one. So I always thought they kind of stayed away from a lot of blood in WrestleMania on purpose, you know? Try to avoid the matches that just are, that had, oh, this is going to, you know, this one's going to be very bloody because of the stipulation or the participants involved. Because it's WrestleMania and it's the biggest audience and it's the one that the casual fan and the, you know, the news media might see. And they'd be like, oh, look at this. It's awful, you know. So that's why I thought the Rumble was kind of a good spot for that. But Vince, for his age and for his lack of professional experience and for his overall clumsiness, wasn't bad. He wasn't bad at all. And had the idea of what to do to put a good match together, and especially with Flair. You knew they were going to come out with something good.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was a good spot, too. I like your theory about the whole blood at Mania, and then they threw it out the window the next year when Hogan and Vince fought, and they friggin' bled all over the place.
Yeah.
Funny how they threw that out the window. But I think you're right about that.
There's been... I don't know if I ever heard it said, but I think it was just sort of like a common sense approach to things. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need it because it's WrestleMania. And it's funny how far we've come now as an industry, you know, that... The idea of it even being in a match in 2014 is just abhorrent to everybody. And I'm glad, because when I first got into the business in 1991, I didn't understand it. I was like, everybody knows what it is. I don't know why everybody's still doing it. And it doesn't help. I mean, you could advertise, Blackjack Mulligan said to me in 1991 or two, he's like, you could put on the poster, there will be a gutting tonight. And you still would draw 300 people if you were lucky. So it didn't matter. And it had, the time for that had passed, and I was glad that it got away from it. So
do you think there's a place for it at all? Like, not having it as prevalent, and then you have a big time match, a grudge match in a cage, something like that, to have it, do you think it would stand out more, or are you just against it completely?
I'm against it completely, 100%. If it happens accidentally, I don't go overboard to throw towels on people's heads and stop the match. If it happens, it happens. You know, Adam Cole gets busted in the mouth at Best in the World a couple of years ago. Just bled buckets out of his mouth. Didn't need to stop the match. Made that an integral part of that match. So when it happens, it happens, and you hope that it doesn't, because it's unintentional, but again, it ain't ballet. Sometimes there's collisions. And if it happens, it happens. Don't stop it. Just keep going. Work through it.
All right. Staying with the Rumble, did you think this is the most star-studded ever? And we're going to get to the general thought of how star-studded the roster was, but you had Triple H, you had Kurt Angle, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, Kane, Steve Austin, The Undertaker, and then you had some returning stars. You had Mr. Perfect, you had Goldust, Big Show was in there too. So a lot of big time names pretty much all the main eventers. Did it stand out to you as a very loaded Rumble?
One of the first times when they finally got around to doing a 40-man Rumble a couple of years ago, I think we had had this idea for this Rumble. We were like, we could do 50 or 60 guys for this Rumble because you could bring back returning guys. You could bring back other WCW names or other ECW names or other whatever names in addition to the current roster of guys that are here. This one is absolutely jam-packed. The return of Perfect and Goldust. This was one of, I think this was one of my, this is like in my top two or three favorite Rumbles of all time. Just because of who, as I loved Kurt, he was awesome. Hennig, and just the overall feel of everything for this one. It just was a big, big time Royal Rumble.
A couple of names that that JR just mentioned that returned that night. Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect, who we hadn't seen since late 96. And then Goldust, who we hadn't seen since what? Middle of 99? What were your thoughts on them coming back?
Well, I love Kurt, and I was so happy to have him back. Because, again, he and I worked together when I first started in the company. We were the announced team on Superstars. And it wasn't too long before he left, and we didn't get to work together anymore. But I really enjoyed hanging out with him. He was a fantastic guy. So I was very happy to see him back. And Goldust, again, I never really was that close with Dustin, you know, through his Goldust run. I always enjoyed seeing him, though, and he was always so off the wall with me. I don't know what it was. He just would say the craziest things. But yeah, it was great to have those guys back.
Now, were they in line to get contracts? Because the word out there at the time was that they ended up earning them with their performance in the match and the way they showed up and treated the match. Was that the truth, or were they pretty much bringing them back to come back anyway?
I think they were bringing them back with the good intention to re-sign them. I don't think they would have put them in that spot had reports been that you know, that they weren't in good shape or you know, that they were anything less than what we expected them to be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, did they earn? They were not under contract when they returned, but they were signed after they appeared at the Royal Rumble. So,
and Perfect doesn't really do as much as I had hoped. I remember at the time, he a little bit early and then kind of fades away, and then we'll get to the reason he got fired later. Did you think they kind of wasted a chance with him? Still in great shape, could still go in the ring. It seemed like he fit the kind of athleticism they were going for at the time. Was there anything holding him back? Was it just the age, or
I don't know. It's a good question. I agree with you. I thought that there was more that they could have done with him. And for whatever reason, they didn't want to push him. I don't know whether Vince still, you know, just didn't have that great feeling about Kurt and may have still been mad at him. I don't think so. I don't know. That's a good question. I wish Kurt was alive. We would have him on the podcast. We talked to him about it. He would have been an awesome guest.
I think he would have. We could do a hologram Kurt Angle on the show.
That's right. We could just run the Mr. Perfect vignettes.
Was Triple H the only choice to win here, or were there any other options in mind?
No, he was the only choice. When he came through the curtain at Madison Square Garden, he was the only choice. If he didn't blow out his quad between, you know, then and the end of the Rumble match, he was going to win it.
Oh, so he was slated to win this thing even before then.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting.
I found that interesting, too.
Why?
He was supposed to win as early as, like, May of 2001?
No.
He said if he got hurt again between when he came back and the end of the Rumble.
Oh, he still would have won. I thought you meant he was pegged to win since he blew out his quad, even before
No. I think once it, you know, because, again, we talked last time about him coming back December. Let's hold it off until January. And then because he was going to win the Rumble. So that's, you know, let's really make that return to pay-per-view special. So. But, yeah, I think once they realized he was going to be back and good to go for the Royal Rumble, that he was going to win the Rumble match.
Did you agree with keeping him a face past the initial return? You know, you get that big pop out of the way. Do you think that was where he was best suited to be at this point?
Yes. I do agree with that.
Me too.
When did he turned, I can't remember when he turned.
July.
Yeah, no, it was good because he was very popular mm-hmm. when he came back. Again, it's that first run through all those towns. Everybody wanted to see him. They hadn't seen him in a year. So, yeah, it was a good opportunity for him to be presented and shown as the star. I think that's one of the reasons why he came back as big as he did. And he's a guy that can, you know, he can really adjust his body. You know, again, he's got a lot of pharmaceutical help. Let's not lie, but he knows what to do to make to lean out. You know, when he had the belt, and I think he was as low as like 235 at one point. I thought he looked great. Then he comes back, and I think he was probably like 260, between 260 and 270. It may have been a little bit more. So he had the ability to kind of rise and fall like the tide. But I think he wanted to come back in that larger-than-life sort of role.
Speaking of coming back larger-than-life.
Chico, Razor Ramon. You take that candle and shove it up your eyes. And then what you do, you give it to your big buddy. Big Daddy Cool, Diesel. Sideways, and then you give it to him. Give it to Hogan. Hogan, you take that camera. It's already shined up. Turn sideways. Eat your vitamins. Say your prayers and stick it straight up all your candy asses.
Let's talk about them.
The NWO.
Yes. After that, the great SmackDown, or it was SmackDown or Raw. Oh, it had to have been Raw because they weren't going to do it on a tape show when Vince had that creepy face, and he turned over.
That was SmackDown. That was right
it. Was SmackDown? Yeah. Okay, I thought it was SmackDown. And he turned the chair, and there were the white letters on the back of the chair. And thoughts backstage about these three guys? Was it ratings desperation, or were they, or was Vince just waiting for the Time Warner money to run out and then bring them in? And what did you think of the night in Milwaukee at No Way Out when they came back?
Okay. Let's go back to how it was done, and it was shot in Stamford. At the studio, and I think it was shot on a Sunday night when nobody would be around.
Hmm.
So it could be kept quiet.
Hmm.
Or it was shot, I don't know if it was a Sunday night, but it was shot late at night. Let's say it like that. So that there would be very few eyewitnesses around.
Right.
And was it ratings desperation? I think that was kind of what a lot of us felt internally. And I don't know what was going on at the time. I can't remember. But I just remember it being like, okay, this was kind of like the nuclear option, the last bullet that you would have to ever fire. Why are you firing it now? You've got so much. But for whatever reason, they felt like it needed it. So maybe leading to Mania, they were looking at things that it just didn't feel strong to Vince. Again, Vince is that feel guy, you know? So, he knew when to pull the trigger. And I'm sure Hogan had something to do with it, talking to him, talking to Vince. So it was Hunter probably was angling to get his boys in there. Again, it's all politics. The timing of it, I wasn't at the Milwaukee event. So I don't know what that was like. The first time I had seen those guys then was at Mania. But, I remember it kind of being like, you know, everybody was sort of like, this ain't WCW, guys. You know that? You know this is WWF, right? We don't answer to you anymore. Okay. So there was a lot of concern on a lot of people whether or not they were actually going to come into work or what. So. Because they were, I don't know if you guys knew this. They were kind of jerks in WCW. I don't know. If you ever heard that.
Depending on your point of view.
Depending on your point, right. A little difficult to deal with.
Right. What's sad is probably Hogan was the least aggravating, and probably if you think
toxic.
About it.
Yeah, that was...
That's the funny part.
Right, and everybody loves Hogan, even though he's probably, you know, as far as like one guy that's put the thumb down on... more people. It's probably Hogan, just because of his longevity.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if he's asked the question, he's going to give an answer.
Right.
And he has opinions. Just because people don't agree with those opinions, and Hogan knows to always come out on top because that's what he does. He can continue to make, in his mind, he can continue to make people a lot of money if he's the one that's positioned on top because he knows what to do to draw that reaction, that number, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Good or bad, you can agree or disagree. That's the way Hogan thinks of himself. And that's it. But as far as like Nash and Hall, like there was the jury was definitely out upon their return. Mm.
That makes sense.
Kid, everybody loved. No problems there. Mm.
And Hogan's interest, we'll get to him later, how he ended up kind of assimilating back into the company and the way he would end up working, some of the matches he worked. So we'll touch on that. It ends up being pretty surprising. Staying around No Way Out and the feuds and matches there, what do you think of and where your memories of the Edge-William-Regal feud? Some felt they didn't really work well together. They didn't mesh. Regal ended up as champion at the end of the feud, won the final match. But did you feel it helped Edge legitimize him as he continued to grow as a single star? And what did you think of the matches?
I am in the abject minority. I just thought Edge was always very overrated. And this was just another example. You know, again, I could watch Regal do anything and I would be entertained. You know, I could watch him going out to the mailbox to bring the mail in, and I would love it, but I'm a big fan of his. So you've got to be really good to be at Regal's level. And Edge is, in my opinion, never was really good. He was good. He was serviceable, but I don't know whether it was just his, footwork or whatever it was, but it just, to me, it never came across as smooth and as nice as when Christian was in there. And I've said this before a number of occasions. I thought Christian was the better wrestler. Of course, there's more to it than that. And Edge wound up becoming a star because he had star power and charisma and all those things that many others who were superior to him lacked.
He also had a hot girlfriend that he stole from another wrestler.
Well, yeah, that's another thing, too. But
it didn't hurt.
I know.
Scott, you're a big Edge fan. Do you want to defend him against Kevin here? I'm curious if we can get a little debate.
Here's my take on Edge, Kevin. And I've said this on almost every vault we've done through since he was a babyface, since he became a solo guy, not a babyface. I always thought that Edge was an exceptional tag team wrestler. But I always thought that Edge was adapting to everybody's style, and eventually almost became like a hybrid wrestler by the time he became a bona fide main event guy in 05, 06. Was he a technical wrestler? Not really. Was he an aerial wrestler? Not as a solo guy. With Edge and Christian, he was, but not when he was a singles wrestler. Is he a power guy? Obviously not. Was he a mat-based guy? You didn't see a lot of headlocks and Indian deathlocks and that kind of stuff. I always thought Edge did an exceptional job of adapting to whoever he was facing. And I thought the Regal feud was a great example of that. That's why I think a lot of people thought the first match at Vengeance was because I think Regal was the kind of guy that Edge had never faced before. By the time they got to the Rumble and then No Way Out, Edge kind of adapted to how Regal worked, and the matches ended up getting better. And I think that's how Edge worked the rest of his career. I agree with you in the sense, Kevin, that Edge is not like Ric Flair. You know, Edge will never be like a technical marvel like a Ricky.
It's a hell of a statement, Kevin.
I know.
Edge isn't Ric Flair, okay? Edge okay.
But Edge is never like
Dolph Ziggler is not Hulk Hogan, all right?
Well, one night at IZOD he was. He got a pop just true. As hot as he was, as Hogan would. But he was never like a... That's because I have Ric Flair on the screen. He just came to mind. But he was never a guy like, oh my God, greatest technical marvel in the world. But I don't think I've ever heard any... And you didn't say this, Kev, but I'm just saying, I've never heard anybody say, that Edge, he sucks. No one, I've never heard anybody say that.
Right.
But I've never heard anybody say, Edge is one of the most amazing in-ring workers I've ever seen in my life.
To me,
he's slightly above serviceable, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's good, but he's not great.
No.
And I think that once his neck injury happened, and he had to get out of the business because of his risk, then everybody like flocked to him like, oh my God, he was so awesome. Mm-hmm. And I stand
really?
By
you think it was after
day.
He got hurt? I feel like that thought was in place before then.
I think it got in place when he started feuding with Cena.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's what I think it
started. Well, but to me the flock got much bigger when he had to step away. I noticed it. Because Scott, I think you summed it up very well. He was a great adapter. and could morph himself into the type of match that he needed to have it be good. But I don't know if I can't think of one Edge match that he ever had as a single to where it was like, wow, I just had to, I have to see that match again and again and again.
Well, are you just talking straight up matches, or are you including like because I thought he was excellent at garbage brawls and ladder matches and that, like his match with McFoley at Backlash 06, WrestleMania 22 was, I thought, fantastic.
Right. The problem was with that match, I don't want to see Mick take those bumps.
Right, but the match was still great.
Well, that's Mick's, that's Mick's decision, too.
Right, I know, but I don't want to see it.
Okay. How about I don't want to see it. Is TLC with Cena was very good?
Yeah.
A lot of people think Edge gave Cena his greatest match that night.
No, Cena's had better, but that was a great feud. I mean, they had pretty good chemistry. You talk about guys Edge has chemistry.
I would say, to me, I always thought Cena's best feud was with Edge. The guy enjoyed it, and I always enjoyed their matches.
Mm.
Because they wrestled each other so many times. You know what I mean? There was a great comfort in that.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't ever anything to where I said, "Wow, I have to see that." Now, like Flair and, let's talk Flair and Steamboat for a second. Because if you're talking about great rivalries, you put Flair and Steamboat at the top of the list. But they really had to go above and beyond, I think, to get to that level. Mm-hmm. To get to that level of, you know, the pantheon of all-time great matches, they had to go in that 2 out of 3 series that they did in 89. Because when you look back at those matches, then the other ones were kind of paint by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But these were the biggest matches that they had ever had. And sort of a culmination of all the work that they did on a regular basis, just probably on a smaller scale. When they worked each other every night, you know, around the horn, they did some of all of those matches. Here in the series in 89, they put it all together, and that's why it became, you know, at the top of the list. Go back and look at Dory Funk Jr. and Jack Briscoe in the 70s, and it was the same thing. Different era, different style. But the absolute best mat wrestlers in the world, from hold, counter hold, from the, you know, from the collar and elbow to the side headlock to the hammerlock, back around again, drop toe hold, all the series of chain wrestling moves, those two were better than any wrestler that you see today, and this was 40 years ago.
On a side note, very quickly, Kev, do you remember a Crockett show called Boogie Jam?
No.
Summer of 84. The reason I'm saying that, we're talking about, you talked about Flair Steamboat quickly. I have here on Studio B, I threw in the Steamboat set. I just sometimes randomly put things in, just play in the background. And there's a Flair Steamboat match from some show called Boogie Jam from July of 84. This match is awesome. And it's very different than any of the trilogy matches. Very different.
I would love to see that. Anything Jim Crockett gets my vote.
Yeah, this is from July of 84. There was a moment where, and you know what's funny? Not that I thought of Edge, but I could see Edge doing this, although I just don't know if he had the pure strength. Steamboat had a Flair in the, you know, in the, as Jesse used to call it, the Greco-Roman knuckle lock. And he had Flair had a body scissors on him at the same time. Steamboat lifted him up by his hands. Lifted Flair up by his hands, deadlifted him with his hands still.
It was actually Flair levitating because he was gone.
No. Anyway, you mentioned Flair Steamboat. I'm just saying there's a match anyway. That not many people know about that's on there. So
we're sorry. We're sorry, Justin. It was two old farts talking about good wrestling.
By me. Well, boo-hoo. I was going to ask you, you mentioned you thought Cena's greatest feud was with Edge. Do you think it was his greatest feud, or he just got the best matches out of him? Like, where would you rank it versus his feud with Orton and his feud with Punk?
I liked Cena's feud with Edge better than the other two. Because, although I remember being the most uncomfortable, right? Just from a not knowing what was going to happen standpoint with Punk. So with Punk, I liked it. You know, and Orton and Cena, every time I watched them wrestle, I just thought of OVW anyway, because I had seen them wrestle so many times before. And with Punk Cena, I never knew where it was going to go. Mm-hmm. So it was from that element that I was always more captivated. Like, okay, they got me. What direction are they going to go in tonight? So. But as far as big matches, big money matches, there's no comparison. To me, I think Edge is a bigger star than Orton. I think Edge is a bigger star than Punk. And Cena is a bigger star than all of them.
Right.
So therefore, Edge versus Cena is a bigger rivalry in my mind because of the star power of the two, the collective star power of the two men.
I wonder where Cena Michaels may have ranked if they actually had a longer feud, because they had a very good match at WrestleMania and then a blowaway match, the hour-long match in London, right after WrestleMania, a couple weeks later. And then they didn't really ever interact again. So I wonder, by your criteria, you know, Michaels a huge star, great matches, captivating matches. If they had had more of an extended feud, maybe that would have surpassed the others, too.
I think it could have. I definitely think it could have. If it would have gone into a, you know, a more emotional, personal journey, if it would have been more drawn out over time, then yeah, because you have those elements there.
Which is funny that it didn't, because I feel like most of Sean's feuds have since he's returned from the injury in 02, but surprised they didn't. So, all right, we're way off track. Scott, why don't you bring us back?
Yeah, let's get back in. All right, a couple of questions ago, Kev, Justin talked about Taz and Spike in the tag division. You'd think by this point that the tag division was pretty stale. I mean, you still had like the APA in there, and you had no knock on Bradshaw or Farouk as guys, but I mean the APA seemed like they were played out. They've been together almost 3 years. The Dudleys, and they were all still in the title mix. Like, were the teams involved just feeling played out at this point?
I thought so. That you were never going to get as good as where they were with the Hardys, Edge and Christian, and the Dudleys. Unfortunately, they're all still under contract, so we still all got to use them. And the talk, and as we get to later on in the year, the brand extension, let's split the Dudleys up. It wound up being the worst decision they could have ever made. Mm. They would have been wise if they could have somehow, hindsight being 2020, move them away for a while. You know, they go to Japan, they go to wherever. And then they come back and they're fresh and they're hot again because they're new. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Triple H had the benefit of being away for 9 months because of a quad tear. And, you know, you'd hope that anything short of cataclysmic injury would be, you know, wouldn't necessarily be the cause to move somebody away just for a few months, just cool them off to bring them back. So we're going on a journey. We're going to go discover ourselves. We're going to go learn a new hold, a new move. We're going to rediscover ourselves and come back better than ever. Hmm. And then they come back repackaged, redone. Bubba loses a little bit of weight. Everybody's healthier and fresh, and they come back and they could do the same old shit and nobody would care because it would be new again.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess to me, the Dudleys weren't even the biggest offenders in this. I thought the APA were. Because a team that was never as greatly over as the Dudleys were, I mean, they were a little bit with the protection stuff and the money and all that, but they didn't. I don't think they got pops and were put into main event level stuff like the Dudleys. But the APA back in here, winning the tag titles, and it felt like it was stunting the growth of some of these maybe newer teams or younger teams or a transition. A team to me that was already stale a year ago, still hanging around and taking control of the division.
And again, depending on what the thought process is of the division, it could work. Well, you know, so APA has the titles now, and yeah, they're stale, and yeah, they're, but who they drop them to winds up being somebody that we never would have expected. And then we can move them on to a bigger feud for the titles against the Dudleys, or I don't even know who the other teams were at that time. Taz and Spike Dudley, Scott Steiner and Test, you know, down the road, who knows? But that's sort of the direction that they could go in.
All right. So the main event of that show, Chris Jericho and Steve Austin. Did you start to notice at all Steve Austin's paranoia at this point seemed and was rumored that he didn't work well with Jericho because he felt like he was being left behind? many felt that he not sandbagged him, but was afraid to really give in or sell too much with the NWO coming in and Triple H moving up. The Rock was around. Starting to feel like he was maybe fading a bit from the top spot.
Yes, and that was a constant theme with everything that Steve did from this point forward until the end. So it was kind of sad, you know, because it was all in his own mind. When he came back from the neck injury, he was worried about blowing up in the ring. He was worried about getting out of breath. Well, the first thing that you're going to do that's going to get you out of breath is if you're worried about being out of breath. I'm not in shape enough. Yeah, you are. Just relax and you'll be fine. Well, I worry that I'm not in ring shape. And then he gets out there and he gets blown up because he's thinking about it. So when a wrestler gets in his own head, it can be a very dangerous thing. So you start looking over both shoulders and you forget, you lose sight of what's in front of you. So I don't think it was anything intentional with Jericho. I just think he wasn't very focused on who was in front of him, but it was on all sides.
What did you think of him at this time, though? Did you think he should have been started to be a little bit phased out of the main event, maybe moved into the upper mid card where, I guess we'll get to a little bit more later. But at this point, did you feel like he was still top dog main event level style guy?
I did. I mean, he wasn't that far removed from we're only talking a few months from really being, that big main event guy. All that happened is we got into 2002 and we had money matches with Triple H down the road yet to come, with the impending NWO to come. So
did you feel like he panicked too quickly?
I think so. Absolutely. He was very paranoid and don't know why.
Okay, we'll get into a lot more with him as we move along.
All right, another feud that grew after this show that led us towards WrestleMania was between Flair, Ric Flair, and The Undertaker. Kev, what'd you think of the build to that? And was there any thought to having Flair break the streak in Toronto? And number three, to that point, was that Taker's best Mania match? All right, question one, how'd you like the build?
Love the build. This was when Flair was doing the whole ownership thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hit the fan by accident, and then Taker beat up David Flair at the training facility.
Oh, yeah, I remember liking this a lot. It was different. I don't know if this was Taker's best Mania match.
To that point, not ever.
Well, I thought the one with Triple H was damn good.
Thought better than this one?
I don't know. I always liked that one. I'd have to rewatch it. I'd have to rewatch it because I remember it being good, but I don't know if it was better than the one that I always liked the most. You know what I mean? Like if I rewatched it, I would be like, oh no, this one was better. I just remember liking it. Anytime Flair's in the ring, and I say this about everybody who is older, who is I worry about their health. I watch every Ric Flair match with one hand, with my hands covering my eyes and just one eye poking out. Mick Foley, same thing. Steve Corino matches in Ring of Honor, same thing. Always hate it. I just worry about them so much. You know what I mean? The young kids, they can go. They can do whatever. They'll be fine. But the older guys, I just worry about. So maybe that's the reason why I didn't enjoy the Flair Taker match as much. But in hindsight, it probably was very, very good.
Yeah, I'd say the only ones even in the conversation are the Triple H one and maybe his match with Diesel at 12. I think other than that, to date, it certainly had, Triple H had a lot of drama too. But
you mean Big Boss Man and Taker at 13 just didn't tickle your fancy?
I did not tickle anything.
Tough critic.
The Arn Anderson spinebuster in this match was maybe the best spot of a Taker match in Mania history to this date, where he slips in from behind. You don't see him on the camera, and all of a sudden he just snaps Taker over with the spinebuster.
Agreed.
That was awesome.
Very much so.
Did you answer the second one? I'm sorry. Did you think, was there any thought to have him break the streak?
I don't know if the streak at this time was that big of a deal.
Well, it's the first time he kind of mentions it, like he holds up the 10 fingers at the end.
It had started with somewhere along the way, whether it was that year or the year before, I had done the voiceover notes for Jim Ross. And I think I had, he's never been beaten at WrestleMania. So anytime there was ever streaks or, so-and-so hasn't been beaten in 5 months and, this will be he's never lost a match in April. I always came up with all these stupid facts and stats for Jim Ross and the King. They hardly used any of them, but that was one they used. So it was, you know, may have been the second year, you know, I think, because, yeah, because I think it was like 9-0, and there was some debate. Wait, did he lose? No, he won by count out. Yeah, but he was supposed to beat Jake, but he didn't. Why not? Oh, you know, Jake pulled a fast one. So, yeah, he's never been beaten. And that's kind of how the streak got started.
He pinned Jake.
Didn't he win one by count out?
No, I think he's...
Giant Gonzalez at 9.
No, it was DQ.
DQ.
Did he pin Jake?
Yeah.
Yeah. He tombstoned
him. Did he tombstone him on the floor, though?
Yeah, and then he rolled
You're
him.
You're wrong, Kevin Kelly. He pinned Jake the Snake.
Then he rolled him in the ring and he pinned him. Yeah.
All right, don't get hot.
That's why I'm firing you.
So Michael Hayes always says on the round tables, don't get hot.
Don't get hot.
And like Packett's all fired up or whatever. I was just watching one of those today.
You gotta get Kevin Kelly in the Legends house. That's all we know. Eating pig's feet with Tony Atlas.
That was disgusting. Ugh.
You can bring your preserves.
Are the toenails painted on the pig's feet?
Ugh. I don't know what Hillbilly Jim and him were thinking. That was this past week's episode. Ugh. Dreadful.
He's a sick man, that Tony Atlas.
And he is so annoying. Ugh. So annoying on that show. All he does is whine. Ugh. That's all he does is whine. That's probably why he hates everybody.
All right, Kevin. Early thoughts on Maven at this time. Was he brought to the roster too soon? Was he the right choice for him and Nydia as the winners of Tough Enough? And then what did you think of his big moment eliminating Undertaker and then going on to win the hardcore title?
Oh, God. How much time do we have?
Let's go. Let it rip. And then we can cover his QVC career.
Who did he beat for the Tough Enough title?
It was Nowinski, Josh Matthews, and on the female side, Taylor Matheny. Lost to Nitty. I thought Chris Nowinski and Taylor were going to win heading into the finals there.
Kenny King wasn't in this one?
No, he was the next year.
He was the next year.
Was Ryback in this one? Or Ryan Reeve or whatever?
No, he was later too.
Okay. Yeah, I thought Maven was fine. He was fine. But he was clumsy. He had terrible footwork. He was just very overrated. But a nice young man. Very, very nice young man. Not a bad word to say about him at all. But this is where the whole idea of create a wrestler started to infiltrate the WWE. And they didn't develop a lot of guys out of the developmental system from this point forward. It really stopped because if you look at what they thought a wrestler could be done, you could create a wrestler over the course of a few weeks of a reality show. And he would be good enough to eliminate The Undertaker from the Royal Rumble. To me, it was the absolute wrong thing to do for 1,000,000,000 reasons. And it just sort of became a self-fulfilling prophecy. So because the more that they tried to get him over, the less over he became. So I don't know. I hated the whole thing.
What did you think of Nydia winning? Did you remember Taylor at all?
Taylor was fine. She was not good or bad. Nydia had an element of skank to her, and that's with a small S. I don't mean it like it's a negative thing.
She was a skank.
She was a stripper. That's where she came from.
Scott's already got his ones out.
You already got...
I like Nydia.
You know, there's already enough strippers in the wrestling locker room, in the Divas locker room. We had to have one more. So who knows? When she got her cans done, they were ridiculous. They were the worst. Ugh. They were gross.
All right. Getting back to Edge, one of the most infamous feuds in 2002 and maybe in history, the shampoo feud. Between Edge and Booker T. Who came up with it? And was it really as bad as it made out to be?
Was it as bad as it was made out to be? I don't know. Was it a terrible idea? Yes. Who came up with it? Who knows? Probably somebody that doesn't work there anymore, didn't work there for very long. This is also when the revolving door of writers started coming in and out. Mm-hmm. So this could have been one of those stupid ideas that was given, you know, in passing from Hollywood guy. And then he's out the door and now we're they're in it. I think they did the best that they could do with that, but it was a rotten idea from the start.
Hmm. All right. Here we go. Walk us through the build to Hogan Rock. Was Austin Hogan ever possible? How do we get to Austin Scott Hall? And then I got a couple more questions about the match itself and the legacy, but let's cover those first few there. The build to Hogan Rock, was Austin Hogan ever possible? And then where do we get to Austin Hall?
The build, it all centered around the truck, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thought that was awesome. I remember doing that. We were in there in Chicago, the Allstate Arena. Was it always going to, this is one of those things. This is one of those. When did WrestleMania change and what was it supposed to be? We knew that Triple H was going to win the Royal Rumble. After that, we didn't know anything. We seriously did not know anything because we did not know whether these NWO guys were going to come in and be. We didn't know how the people were going to take them. We didn't know who they were going to feud with. We didn't know anything. And when I say we, it wasn't like I was part of the decision-making process. But none of us just, you know, right on the outside of that doorway, we were all sort of waiting like, well, what are we doing? What direction are we going to go? Hogan Rock seemed to be the first thing that was settled, though. So I don't know if Hogan Austin was ever considered and talked about. But this is where Austin, I think, sort of got the short end of the stick. I think he got kind of left out of the mix because I seem to remember Austin Hall sort of being just sort of paired up like, well, the record stopped and you guys are the last two. So there you go. Here's your match. Not a great way to treat the biggest star that they had seen over the last 10 years and the returning guy who was one of the biggest stars of the previous 10 years. But whatever. So that was how we got to the match. That was the reasons why I thought they got to the match, because I think it was the first one that was really made. It seemed to make the most logical sense. And I don't know if Hogan Austin was ever talked about.
All right. How about the legacy of Hogan Rock? Where does it rank with other legendary Mania matches?
There, the moment when they stood face to face, nose to nose, and they each looked over their left shoulder. That's one of the greatest moments ever. It was watching, you know, having seen thousands of matches over the years, there are very few to where I ever say, I've got to watch this one in the arena. But this was one. 99% of the rest of them, I'm going to sit and watch at the monitor and not even worry about it because I've seen it before. This I've never seen before. I know I would never see it again. And I didn't know what the crowd was going to do. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Well, do you feel it should have closed the show?
Another good question. In hindsight, yes. But I think at the time, they made the right decision because they didn't know what the crowd was going to do. You know? This was one of those things that, like, now we see fairly commonplace where the crowd becomes the third man in the ring, you know, the 12th man, the whatever, however you describe them. This took on a life of its own that I don't think anybody could have ever predicted.
So one of my questions was the reaction expected. Obviously not.
It was talked about. What was his name? Photographer. I think it was Tom Buchanan. We were talking about, yes, it was Tom Buchanan. We were talking, was it Tom or was it Rich? We were talking about where, I can't remember. Anyway,
James Buchanan.
James
15th
Richard
President.
No. Buchanan. The idea of their entrances and how everything was going to go and how we were going to shoot this and what we were going to do. I remember that conversation. Then I remember talking with Pat Patterson, and Pat told me, Pat was the agent for the match. Pat, what's the crowd going to do? He goes, I don't know, but I told both guys to be ready for anything. Okay. So there was a thought process going in that And I was just sort of like, this is the only match I really cared about on the show. That I just wanted to see how they were going to embarrass Jericho, you know, which was, of course, we knew was going to happen. But so it's sort of like, you know, I'm making sure, okay, what are you going to do camera wise? What are you going to do this wise? What's the agent going to do? What are you guys thinking about? I was really like a student of this one. So, yeah, I was all in on this match. And the crowd did exactly what the crowd was going to do.
Was the end of the match ad-libbed? So after the match, Rock wins, they embrace, they pose, the outsiders come out, they beat up Hogan. Was Hogan's face turn planned all along, or did they call that after because they saw the reaction of the match?
Planned all along. Reaction of the match just made it that much better.
Interesting. So they're ready to break up the NWO right away?
They wanted to turn Hogan right away.
Right.
And I think part of that was because they didn't know where Steve was. And I knew they needed to turn. I think that, you know, by this point now, Hunter's thinking, all right, it's almost, you know, when am I going to turn? When am I going to turn back? So that means you've got, you don't know what Austin's going to do. You're losing Triple H. We need Hogan. So there you go.
Well, you talked about the main event, whether this match we talked about was should have been the main event or what was the main event. And obviously Jericho did lose. Final thoughts on his title reign from Vengeance to now, to this point in Toronto. Was it a waste? Was it simply transitional? Did putting him together with Stephanie wreck it? And did it marginalize him?
Yes, it wrecked it. Yes, it marginalized him. And it started off great. But then went down in a horrible ball of flaming dog shit. So, pretty much it.
Would he have been better off if he never won?
He would have been better off if he would have just missed the town. If he just would have not been in Toronto, it would have been better.
Well, see, that match to me actually wasn't that bad. It's the weeks leading up to it is what really killed him. Because, of course, he was going to lose to Triple H at Mania. I mean, he got a lot of offense in. It's like he squashed him. It was the leading up with him being Stephanie's bitch is what screwed everything
up. Yeah. Well,
you're the dog and all that other crap.
Right, right. Yeah.
I mean, Christ, he could even won at Mania, and I think he would have been ruined because they would have. It was too much Stephanie overwhelming in the lead up to that.
Right. And that was the only opportunity that they had to perhaps save him through the booking is if he would have won.
And he can't do that. I mean, we talked about the story of Triple H returning. I mean, at this point, you've come this far. You can't have him lose here. I mean.
Right.
They've already botched Jericho. So, you know, they blew that, and then it wouldn't get much better. He's not even on the next show. So, all right, so the next day, Steve Austin walks out. Memories of that night, did you think he'd be back? What was your thoughts?
My thoughts about this night, because, again, I'd gone back to Stanford and was working in the office. So then immediately we went into cover this like a news story mode, and we lined up Bite This. So we had him on Bite This that week. Once it calmed down, we were able to figure, okay, he's either going to go back and everything will be fine and be sorted out, or no, he's going to go home and that's going to be the end of it. And if it's the end of it, we're going to get him on Bite this week. And we got him on there, man. It was great. It was the best interview we ever did because he just came on there and he told the truth. And it was freaking great. So, and they actually used it on television. But, I guess it had been really building in his mind. So, you know, whatever. Right, wrong, indifferent. Should he have left? I don't know.
On a side note, Kev, I was telling you about this Steamboat Flair match from 84. It's still going. This match is definitely at like 40 minutes now, and it's been pretty awesome. So you definitely need to find it. This match is right up your alley.
I couldn't have been more wrong about we'll talk about this on the podcast, not to cross the streams, but I couldn't have been more wrong about the WWE network and the television financial deal they didn't get.
$1 billion.
I thought it was going to be $1 billion. and it wasn't anywhere close. Awful.
Speaking of television, after WrestleMania, we had the brand split and the first draft. Did you like the draft concept? What were the thoughts backstage about guys being on specific shows only? And was there anything you would have changed?
Well, okay, remember the Brawl for All? It was supposed to be a shoot. Mm-hmm. Everything was going to be real.
Sadly,
so
yes.
was this. Like they really? Were not. Yes, they were not going to tell anybody anything. Now, of course, everybody was working outside deal and was finding out what they were doing. I also felt like this draft was done by a bunch of non-sports fans.
It was awful. The execution was awful.
It was terrible.
Yeah. So I'm a sports fan. I know what the NFL draft looks like every year. There's a reason why millions and millions and millions of people watch this thing. That's all the WWE had to do. But no, they got to be cute. They got to be sports entertainment. They got to be Hollywood. They got to be all this crap. And what you wind up with is nothing. You wind up with absolutely nothing. And that's what you got. I hated it. Hated it.
Well, the worst part, too, they don't even do like a snake fashion. So they started with Vince and the Flair, and they just go back and forth, which is stupid. When you do like the draft we did on your last show, you know, the current day draft or whatever, you snake it. So I go first, you go second, then you go first and I go second. So they just had like it was completely slanted towards one way. You know what I mean? It was just the whole thing was weird execution. Then you could tell they're running out of time, and at one point they just rattle off picks back and forth without thinking about it. This whole thing was stupid.
Stupid.
There's so many better ways they could have done it.
Well, plus the other problem was they were both drafting for different philosophies. Vince was actually drafting a good show for SmackDown, whereas Flair was drafting all the heels so he could torture them.
Yeah.
It was just stupid.
Right.
Made no sense. Why are you drafting The Undertaker? Because I want to torture him. Why are you drafting the NWO? Because I want to torture him. Yeah, but they suck. It's like...
Yeah, the whole thing was weird. Very oddly booked.
Yeah.
Did you think they needed it, though? The split?
Because again, the original concept going back to, you know, when they bought WCW was to run separate brands and separate shows. And they'd booked buildings under WCW. There were going to be WCW live events run. There were ECW live events run.
Mm-hmm.
Why, you know, could they have done the same thing with the brand extension? Yeah. Let's run different shows. It was getting to be just too much and too crowded. And the idea of let's make it special so that you could only see so-and-so on a particular show was a good idea. I like it. Let's make it special. But you cheapen it, you know, the minute that you have one person come over from the other side. You also cheapen it when brand A is stronger than brand B. And you do it on purpose that way. SmackDown was always made to look like a bitch after the first round of drafts because Raw was the more important show. Well, that's crap. Let the chips fall where they may. Too bad. Let there be some accountability. But it's not real. That's the whole thing. So they wanted it to be real, but it wasn't real. And it's not real because it's not real. So, hated it.
One thing I'm guessing you did not hate was the debut of Brock Lesnar. What did you think of his early days? Were the first few months pretty much perfect booking for a guy like him?
Yeah, he was awesome. And I think before, wait a minute, Austin left? Hold on.
Well, no, Austin walked out the first time, the night after Mania, then he came back 2 weeks later.
And when did he leave for Brock?
June, which we haven't gotten to.
Oh, we haven't gotten there yet? Never mind.
Okay.
It was in June that we covered it like a news story, and we went crazy.
Okay. The first time, he just like disappeared for like 2 weeks. He was pissed off. He didn't go to the Mania party and all that.
Yeah, no big deal. That one wasn't that big of a deal. Everybody thought it was just, Steve's being pissy. So, and I do remember this. I can't remember who it was that said it, but it was like, yeah, you remember what an asshole Shawn Michaels was at the end of his run. That's the way Steve Austin's getting here at the end of his.
So, interesting comparison, because you don't really ever hear that, you know, like that.
It's
Austin's
a good
always
Kevin.
Held a little bit more revered than Michaels was in the 90s, so it's interesting.
Yeah, it was, and I forget who made it. It was one of the crew, you know, like somebody that worked kind of behind the scenes, but it was exactly right.
Okay, so Brock, perfect booking?
Oh my gosh, perfect, perfect, perfect. The only guy to ever get a spot on Raw and that ever got a replay in a dark match when he did the Shooting Star Press. So, yeah, what are you going to do? He's going to come out, he's going to kill people. That's all you need to do. And he was with Heyman, right? Heyman had him?
Yep.
Yeah, perfect.
Did you know he was a star immediately?
Well, I knew he was a star before that.
Yeah.
Needed to do was just see him out there in that scenario, and it's like, yep, that's it right there.
He was the perfect Vince guy. Big, you know, massive, jacked up power guy. Right up Vince's alley.
Right, exactly. And, you know, Jerry Briscoe loved him because he was an amateur, and there was a lot to love. So,
no attitude issues early on?
No, not early on. I liked him because he took a stand. I remember complimenting him after he won the belt, because I had seen him like right after SummerSlam. And said, hey, I haven't seen you in a while, but I just want to say I'm really proud of you for kind of standing up for yourself and sticking to your guns. And he said, oh, thank you very much. You know, I said, a lot of times young guys come in and they're very afraid to speak up or say anything, but you got balls and keep that. And he said, okay, good, thank you. So then I said, by the way, when the next time you do a Shooting Star Press, here's what you want to do. And I got up on the top rope and I showed him exactly how he felt.
And then when you broke the ring, that's where they got the idea for the next show.
See, here we go again. Here we go again.
Scott laughed. See, he can pretend that he doesn't think it's funny, but he laughed.
Unbelievable. Don't you have a mute on your mic, Kev? Right, you should wire your mic to his.
Let's go.
All right, next. This question, we don't have to go too crazy. We've talked about Edge a lot, but your thoughts on his feud with Angle, which Justin and I both glowed over. Quickly, your thoughts on it, because we talked a lot about Edge before, but what were your thoughts on that feud in general? Did this make him a star?
Who, Edge?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it did. This was where it started and began. Where did they finally do the head shaving thing?
That was a Judgment Day.
In
Nashville.
October?
May.
Oh, May?
Jeez, they fought at Backlash.
I always think feuds run longer than they do.
They fought at Backlash. Kurt won. And then they did the whole t-shirt that says "You suck" in the frame and all that jazz. And then they fought at Judgment Day and Edge won and Kurt had his head shaved.
Yeah, this was the Brian Gewirtz special. I always wish they would have just put, you know, Brian Gewirtz and had him like a pinata and we all just could have taken swings at him because these were his boys, Kurt and Edge. And that may have been another reason why I never cared for Edge as a top guy, just because I always hated Brian Gewirtz, like just despised him. So just part of that Hollywood contingent, that comic book clique that I just couldn't stand and had no business being in the, in wrestling. So. Yeah, there you go. But no, Edge was great in this. Both guys were great. Fantastic.
How badly did Kurt need to shave that head?
I don't know.
I don't know. You can always tell that his hair was going to go eventually. He had that very thin hair that was slowly going. Probably was going to should have done it anyway.
Yeah, he did have a receipt. He's the only guy I can ever think of that lost a hair versus hair match and kept it shaved off.
Mm.
It's funny. True. His head kept just getting bigger afterwards.
Yeah. Amazing.
All right. Around this time, Eddie Guerrero returned. Had been gone for a year due to the drug issues. Got into the feud with RVD, who I thought he was a perfect foil for. What did you think of that feud? And did you enjoy the Backlash match that essentially saw Eddie squash him and win the Intercontinental title? They would fight two more times with RVD, eventually winning in a ladder match on Raw. Did you enjoy it? Did you like Eddie coming back? Were you happy to see him? Was he doing well?
Yes, I was very happy to see Eddie. He had come back, and he was much different. Cleaner, physically, emotionally, spiritually, he was a different person. It was great to see. And I don't remember the details of that match with RVD, but I do remember it being like, well, he's back and he's going to be the, you know, perfect way, win the Intercontinental belt. It'll be good. Did it get cut for time? I'm wondering if that's the reason why that match wound up being the way it was. Even though it was early on in the show, it wasn't the main event. they might have cut their time a little bit. I don't know. I don't know why the match was the way it was. Because generally it doesn't make sense to have somebody like Eddie win a match in that fashion. And I don't remember RVD being hurt.
Well, it was a long... I mean, it wasn't a complete squash, but he... Like, RVD got some offense, but then he pretty much, like, Eddie just neutralized everything he tried to do down the stretch and then just beat him clean, like, out of nowhere. So I don't think it was, like, rushed or anything. I think it seemed like just the booking. Like, Eddie was just better than him, and then RVD slowly learned how to kind of counter and end up winning.
Okay.
So it's just a cool match. I liked it.
Mm. Now, also at Backlash... probably the shortest WrestleMania title feud, title reign ever. after 1 month, Triple H loses to the now red and yellow clad Hulk Hogan. Did you agree with the title change there? And to ride that nostalgia wave, number two, did you think that Triple H got hosed? That he was kind of a collateral damage for the nostalgia wave? And was Hogan always planned to eventually win the belt back? Or was it a hair trick? Was it a trigger move because of the nostalgia wave?
I think the reaction in Toronto changed everything for everybody. The nostalgia wave was launched in Toronto, and whatever booking plans were amended to capitalize on it. Do I agree with it? Yes and no. I see it from a business perspective, and it certainly didn't mean that Triple H couldn't get his heat back and couldn't, you know, come back around, which he was able to. But where else are you going to do it? And who else are you going to have him do it with, you know, to where it meant the most? Yeah, you had a very small window with Hogan. So they took advantage of it as quickly as possible and did what they could to get as much as they could out of it. And then when it was it, that was it.
Thoughts on Flair going into the heel owner role versus Austin? You know, first when he was with Vince, he was being the face, and then now that they're split up, he basically starts becoming Vince McMahon. That was the story. Even though it's a fresh face in the role with Flair, did you feel like he was just going back to the well again to keep Austin happy? All right, we'll go back to what made you big in the past and kept you happy. You get to beat up the owner and do your thing and be the rebel. Did you feel like it was just a little bit there to just kind of satiate Austin, or did you think it was a shrewd move?
Certainly not a shrewd move, because I don't think it advanced the ball or did anything groundbreaking. Was it to placate Steve? Probably. Was Flair fine in that role? Yes. I think we were all still laughing about, you know, his days on Nitro when he had gone crazy. So that was always sort of like in the backs of our minds as we're watching Flair as you know, being Vince. And it was just like, when's he going to start firing people? You know, when's he going to knee drop, you know, knee drop the beer can? He did that, all that stuff. I love all that stuff. But yeah, it wasn't anything great. You know, the heel owner, give me a break. That had been done to death by then.
Right. And I mean, Flair did make it entertaining, but exactly. We had seen it so many times. It just fell back to the well again. No matter how much Flair and even Arn as his right hand man made it interesting or entertaining.
Arn.
What do you think of Arn? You like Arn?
I love Arn.
Double A.
He's the best.
All right, I'm going to give you four words. They're infamous in the urban legend of WWE, and just tell me everything you know. Plane ride from hell.
Okay. So, of course, I wasn't on the tour, but I went to, when they landed, we went to where? New Jersey? Where were we? Where was Raw?
Something like that.
I don't know, honestly. Yeah.
East Coast?
So let's just, yeah, it was East Coast. All right. So we heard the stories immediately. And it began to sort of spread like wildfire. The worst thing that was done in the 24 hours after the flight was that Michael Hayes had gotten his ponytail cut off. Now, after time passes, Oh, yeah, Hennig and Brock got into it and wrestled a little bit on the plane. Yeah, okay. That's just the boys being the boys. But then when Flair being naked, singing songs on the, you know, Steve singing songs on the microphone, Flair basically wagging his penis at people.
Little Nate. Dustin Runnels singing to Terry? Was that that flight?
Dustin was singing to Terry. Yeah, there was a lot of that.
The one thing that's come out about the Brock Perfect thing was that they were wrestling dangerously close to the emergency exit door.
Right.
And one random kick, everybody would have been sucked into the netherworld.
Right. Michael Hayes, the rest of his hair would have gone. It was one of those things that, like, was, oh, it's the boys being the boys. But then over time, it, like, kind of took on a life of its own and got much worse. But when everybody landed, nobody could believe that Kid had cut Michael Hayes' hair. That was just too great. You know, we all just wanted to see his face. We just wanted to see his reaction to having been H-bombed and then embarrassed like that.
Mm. So who was fired as a result of this whole thing? Hall? Hennig? Was Hall from this or other reason?
I know Kurt got fired because of it.
That sucks.
I can't remember who else got fired because of the plane ride from hell. Should have been a lot of people.
I guess Goldust thing wasn't too bad. I'm say surprised they kept him and not perfect. He was just embarrassing himself more than anything. All right. Another four words. Tell us all you know about it. The change to WWE, get the F out.
This was kind of like when Vince bought WCW. It was an oh, by the way. Oh, by the way, we're changing the name of the company. What? Yeah, we're going to be WWE from now on. We're sick of fighting these lawyers. Sick of fighting the World Wildlife Fund. Just not doing it anymore. Changing the name. We're entertainment anyway. Okay. Now what are we? Are we the... We're not the... We used to be the World Wrestling Federation. Now we're the World Wrestling Entertainment? What are we? No, it's just World Wrestling Entertainment. And just say WWE. Okay, you got it. So there you go. And it was like, hey, we got a new company name. Neat. Get the F out. Give me a break. Another opportunity to be crass.
I heard from, I don't want to say this is urban legend, but I've heard this through the grapevine from a couple people I know who know people that work there, that the genesis of this, the whole, European lawsuit in the 2000 when they were flaunting the F when they weren't supposed to, that was all on Shane, and Shane was kind of left holding the bag on that. Do you know anything about that or no?
I don't know anything about that. That's interesting.
Because apparently
We did always blame just copyright attorneys.
Because the story was that they were not the deal they had with the Panda Huggers, quote unquote, that all wrestling fans call them, is that whenever you guys were in Europe, you weren't allowed to use the actual, say the abbreviation WWF. You had to actually say World Wrestling Federation in full. You couldn't have the logos at like merchandise stands and very simple stuff like that. And apparently in 2000, when you guys were at the top of your game and obviously very arrogant and bloviating, that they didn't really care about that and nobody would notice, and obviously the World Wildlife Fund did, and that Shane was in charge of those kinds of things and he took his eye off the ball.
At the time, Shane was in charge of, I thought, wasn't he in charge of WWE.com?
I thought so, that and the new media and all that shit.
Yeah. And I had done... And not to discount your urban legend, I think there are there's something to that. I had called hundreds of hours of international programming and had never once been told not to say WWF or to only say World Wrestling Federation. So I don't know. I always thought what happened was when it came time to register the trademark, before any of this legal fight had started, for whatever reason, they didn't have the trademark in America. That they owned it in Europe and it was okay in Europe, and that they were legally fighting over the U.S. And it was only finally when Vince tapped out and said, that's it, I'm not spending any more money on this, that they then went ahead and changed the whole company's name.
That's how I always took it, too, because they were able to use WWF on DVDs and all that stuff going forward in Europe. And that's the whole reason they had the, you know, people would buy the region 2 player to get the original copies on Blurred. That's what I always saw too.
Right. But it was somebody dropped the ball somewhere. Some stupid lawyer. Between lawyers and Hollywood writers. Screwing up everything in wrestling.
Speaking of stupid, back to the tag teams. What was the deal with putting Rico and Rikishi together?
Hell, I don't know. Two guys that weren't over, let's put them together.
Well, Rico was managing Billy and Chuck.
Yep.
And then Rikishi, for some reason, like you said, not over anymore, and JR and I made that pretty clear on our vault, somehow needed to have this clandestine storyline with no tag partner or whatever, and then they decided, let's have him and Rico, and then somehow they win. Seemed very out of nowhere.
Right. There was a lot of that. Don't know why.
Did you like the Hell in a Cell match with Jericho and Triple H? It felt like they wrestled angry, kind of to prove a point. Ended up having a really good match. Any memories, too, of Tim White, the shoulder dislocation that would end his career?
Oh, that was... I do remember that. Just remember it being a very violent match. And I can't remember the spot where Timmy got hurt.
He got, was it like Jericho or Hunter, one of them, he got bumped off the ring apron, slammed into the cage, and then flopped to the floor. And it looks like he shoulder popped That's out it. When he hit the floor.
Listen, you'd think all those years, you know, drawing pints at the friendly tap, he would have been in better shape.
Yes.
When the money's on the line. Damn it all to hell.
Now Pop he was the, back in.
He was not the referee for the match, right?
Yeah.
Or was he?
Yeah, no, he was. Yeah.
That's
so
what
they had to slide another ref in? Is that what they did?
Well, no, I think they were going to use him to... I thought they were going to use him to open the door. Like, I think that was part of the storyline. He was going to get hurt. They'd open the door so they could get out.
Oh, so it was one of those deals that he got hurt when he was really not supposed to get hurt. Like right. Kurt Angle at the SummerSlam.
Right. He was supposed to take a bump.
And instead dislocated his shoulder.
Right. It was supposed to be a fake hurt. And they'd open the door and let the wrestlers out to go fight on the top of the cage. But he ended up really hurting himself.
He got an ouchie for real.
Mm-hmm. Big ouch.
Poor Timmy. Didn't they try to kill him later on?
Oh, yeah. That started, actually, in Providence. Scott and I were there at Armageddon 2005.
Another great red-letter moment for that company.
When they had him shoot himself at the bar with Josh Matthews, and then it turned into a web series where he'd keep trying to kill himself.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Any thoughts on the match itself, them wrestling, pissed off, anything like that?
I just liked it, other than the fact that it was a very violent match. I mean, I liked it. They had everything and all the tricks, didn't they, for that one?
Yeah, it was good. They really went all out.
Where was that one?
That was Nashville as well.
Okay. I liked it. Thumbs up from me.
Later that night, we had another belt switch. For the third straight month, and The Undertaker, who won the number one contenders match at Backlash, ends the nostalgia run of Hollywood Hulk Hogan and won the Undisputed title. Did you agree with that? What'd you think of the belt kind of being bounced around over this couple months?
I'm trying to put myself back, and I don't remember this title switch at all. Help me.
It was the feud where Taker dragged Hogan on the back of the bike.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hogan got that great pop in Montreal on SmackDown. The ovation was like 9 minutes or something. And I always found it weird that they never mentioned the past there, like that they feuded, like, you know, it was, I took your title for my first title run. Like, they never mentioned like 91, or I always thought that was kind of weird too. But Vince interfered, and the choke slam that was really horrendous.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there was a lot of I think there was a lot of back and forth on that, if memory serves me correctly, as to whether or not it was time. And why do the nostalgia run if you're going to end it so short? But the idea was like, okay, Hogan's good on the chase. He had the nostalgia run. Now let's put him on the chase, and then we can sort of fade him off into the distance, because we don't think he's got that much more. So that was the thought process. But being dragged by the motorcycle, that was a great gimmick.
It almost felt just a little too short, though. Like, I know he didn't have that much in the tank, but that took me a little bit longer. I just felt they took the belt off Triple H. They kind of futzed up the Mania comeback storyline just to get it on Hogan, and then you only give him 4 weeks. I don't know. It just seemed a little weird.
I mean, and I also felt like they were hot-shotting because of the brand extension. I think that had a little bit to do with it as well.
I'm sure ratings do. I think they were steadily going down at this point.
Yeah.
They were really panicking.
So the new champion always got a good rating on Raw because people hear about it through the grapevine. They didn't spend the money on the pay-per-view. They'll tune in droves on the USA or TNN or wherever we were at this time.
Still TNN.
TNN, brother.
We got pop. All right. We already talked about Austin walking out. This is where he really walked out. Talk to us about that night with Brock and also his potential feud with Eddie. Do you agree with how he kind of left Eddie hanging and how Austin handled everything? Did you agree with him walking out to not lose to Brock? Just share your thoughts on that night that
okay.
he walked.
He didn't walk out because he was going to lose to Brock. He
on
walked
TV.
Out. On TV, he walked out because he thought it was too soon to do anything with Brock. And that the fact that there would be even the thought of him losing this match made absolutely no sense at all. I think part of it, too, is that Steve didn't want to wrestle Brock because he was still pretty much a greenhorn. And Steve was on borrowed time physically, maybe not letting on how badly he was hurt. So you can't spring something like this on a guy like Steve Austin. You got to talk to him about it over time. And it's got to be his idea. So, yeah, he did leave Eddie hanging. And that wasn't the plan. Again, this was a match that was going to mean nothing. Because where they were doing the, you know, they had done the karaoke bit, right? The singing in the bar at the Friendly Tap, correct?
Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm. That was the direction that they were going. And I think Steve wanted to work with Eddie. And this Brock match was just going to be a way to make Brock. And it had nothing to do with Steve. So Steve was like, no. See ya.
It obviously is evidence, you know, talking about his spot. He was already my spot
with the midgets.
You know, he already felt like he was being shunted down the card. And now... here he is being treated like just another guy. You could lay down for Brock and it'll make him look good. What? So
yeah, no.
You could definitely see that.
I don't blame him. These pretzels are awesome.
Making me thirsty.
Oh, I wish I was at the Friendly Tap.
I don't think that was at the Friendly Tap. Wasn't that like some country bar or something?
I think so, yeah.
It was like some honky tonk or whatever. Yeah,
that's right, it was.
And they were playing like guitars and then Austin... I don't know if it was Eddie hit Austin with the bottle or Austin hit Eddie with the bottle. I don't know. Somebody got hit with a bottle at the end. God, I haven't seen that promo in ages. It's been so long.
There were some cool matches in the stretch on Raw, too. You had the right after this, shortly after this. I think it was Rock and Eddie had a match on SmackDown that was pretty cool. It was quick, but cool. Hogan and Flair had their first ever WWE TV match. A lot of cool stuff.
Mm.
Random shit.
Just trying to do things to Hotshot to draw television ratings.
Well, they ended up doing it because Austin walked out. Remember, they panicked and did Flair-Vince that night and gave the whole company back to Vince. Remember? And they had Flair go back in the ring. Was that supposed to last longer?
I don't know how far it was supposed to last, but it certainly wasn't supposed to end that night.
Right.
In Atlanta.
Now, we've been talking about Hogan a lot tonight, and JR and I obviously documenting it. This comeback run was pretty impressive in a lot of ways. He had some good matches, solid, putting guys over left and right, very un-Hogan-like, as we talked about earlier. Were you impressed by that? That he came in and played ball pretty much every month?
I thought it was like I couldn't believe that this was the same Hulk Hogan that everybody had talked about. I had never worked with him in WCW. I had never had any personal interaction with him. Mm-hmm. One of the first times I met him, it was, I can't remember what building we were in. I was talking to Mark Henry. And I think I had told this story before. All of a sudden, somebody grabs my left arm and takes it over in an arm wringer. And I look at its Hogan. And so I sell it appropriately, you know, and I think I thumbed him in the eye and he staggered down the hallway and that was it.
It's funny.
It's the only escape I know. So I go back to talking to Mark Henry and I go, Hulk Hogan just took my left arm. That was pretty cool. He had just come in and was having fun.
Yeah, you could see it.
And I guess all the pressure was off of him and anything that had been, where he was, the way he did business in WCW, there wasn't any of that in the WWE because there were checks and balances. He wasn't going to be able to get away with any of that. So he just went back to being Hulk. And he certainly wasn't Hulk of 84 to 88 or Hulk of 90 to 92. You know, this was Hulk in 2002. So he just wanted to come in and have fun.
Not only did he play ball, I mean, he was actually putting on some solid matches. Like, him and Hunter was pretty good. He goes toe-to-toe with Angle. Let's Angle throw him around and hit him with suplexes and everything else. And he really, really worked hard in these matches, too. Not just putting guys over, but really actually, you know, really busting into the ring.
Well, sure. And what was his ex-wife's name?
Linda.
All right, so the first time I saw Linda was at WrestleMania. And when Hulk and Linda, and I guess Brooke was with him, they all checked in, right? And when you went to WrestleMania, you didn't, like, check in at the front desk. They had the keys already pulled and downstairs away from all the fans. And it was all the talent relations staff. And I just remember seeing, like, Linda for the first time. And it's like, oh, yeah, so that's Linda. Okay. And I looked down at her feet. For whatever reason, she's wearing sandals. She's the longest toes that I've ever seen. Her toes are so long, guys, that they, like, curled over the front of her sandals.
Ugh.
It was like a rake. It was the strangest looking foot I had ever seen. And I was just like, oh, it's horrifying. I hope she's not looking at me looking at her foot. I hope nobody else is looking at me looking at her foot thinking that this is hot because this is disgusting. And Tony Atlas crossed my mind, I swear to God. I was like, oh, Tony Atlas would love this. And that was it. I walked away. So when I'm watching Hogan Knows Best, I'm like, they're never going to show her feet. Wow, she's got the worst feet I've ever seen. Worst feet in the history of the business. So that and, those two stories, Hogan taking my left arm while I'm talking to Mark Henry and Linda having horrible looking feet. That's my two recollections of that era. And Hogan working his ass off.
I had said on our King of the Ring 02 show that I think Hogan, when he left in 2000, the whole terrible shoot thing that Russo did, that whole clusterfuck, that Hogan wanted to kind of wash his hands of that and kind of fix his image, that he wasn't that kind of guy, and that he was allowed to, when he came back to WWE, he was allowed to, you know, he was able to kind of clean his image up and be like, look, I'm going to be here. The young guys need me. I'm going to do my thing. And I think that I always thought that was a huge reason why this run was so good is because I think he wanted to erase the image of what everybody thought he was in WCW.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that would like to get away from Vince Russo and you know, take showers and have their careers restored. Mm. Very few guys have the ability to do that, but Hulk Hogan can. So I had a long talk with through some loose translation from Rocky Romero when I was talking with Okada in New York after War of the Worlds. And Okada is my new favorite wrestler. Okay. He's awesome. And Rocky, I said, boy, it's amazing. You were in TNA and they basically had you just sort of as a stooge for Samoa Joe. And Rocky had been sort of like loosely translating and then finally goes, Vince Russo idea. Ha ha. And Okada goes, yeah. You know, loose return in English, you know, like, oh, it sucked. And I'm like, well, we're very happy with you. And he's like, I want to come back. And I said, I think we can make that happen. So isn't it funny that like the Japanese translation for horrible gimmick is Vince Russo idea.
What do you think of Russo's new website? You're going to go do a podcast for them?
No, you'll probably book him for the Place to Be Nation, though.
No, all set. Competitor. No? He's a competitor. I don't want him around here.
Is he really?
He's doing a pop culture website, baby.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, everybody's going to flock to hear his ideas.
Website on a pole.
Website on a pole match.
Double crap on a stick.
What? Well, at the show, Michaels returning here. Joins up with the NWO, those little Betsy Boop haircut, and shows up.
Betsy Boop haircut.
Betty Boop. <It's
laughs> Betsy Boop. It's her sister.
Son of a bitch. Montreal takes the lead.
Like Canadian Impact.
Yeah, 2-1 with a minute and a half left. Yeah. Michael's coming back. Was he finally cleaned up, finally healthy? Was there plans for him to eventually get in the ring, or is he just going to come back to being a manager? For the purposes of this, we're only going through June, so he was just around for a few weeks and was basically just managing the NWO.
I think it was sort of a wait and see. I do remember talking to one of the coolest things that I ever did, okay, personally and professionally. Almost at the same time, Eddie Guerrero gets saved, Shawn Michaels gets saved, and I was saved as well. And I know I never come across like that here on this show or any other show, but it was neat. And it was something that I did, and it was very personal, the reasons why I did it. But I just remember the three of us being together. Can't remember the town, but the three of us getting together and actually praying. And that was like one of the highlights of my personal and professional life. Much like when Eddie came back, I saw a different Shawn Michaels. And whatever was going to happen with Shawn down the road was all predicated on how he came back. The door was always going to be open for Shawn Michaels to come back in and do whatever he wanted to do when he was ready. Vince kept him on the payroll for all those years, said, and he could have been lying to us. You're paying him a lot of money every week. And he said he deserves it for everything that he gave this company. Okay. So Vince always had that soft spot for Shawn. And when Shawn was ready, he would be back.
Hmm. You talked about that. We talked about this earlier, so we don't have to go too crazy because I think we know the answer. But Brock winning the King of the Ring tournament, the final one, final pay-per-view one, was obviously the right choice.
Yeah, as far as anybody who needed to win, could win, would benefit by winning, and I think would have helped make the tournament bigger by winning, it's Brock Lesnar. Even though the King of the Ring is probably like the least of his accolades, the least reported accolade, you know. Mm-hmm. Two-time NCAA champion, former WWE champion, and then maybe King of the Ring, but anyway. Yeah, that was a no-brainer.
I'm just going to name a few people here, just some quick hit thoughts we didn't really talk too much about. Jamie Noble debuted here at the White Trash Trailer Trash gimmick along with Nydia. Nydia portrayed as Hurricane's ex-girlfriend randomly out of nowhere. What'd you think of Noble in his early days?
My favorite character of anything that had really come out of in the wake of the dust of the invasion was Jamie Noble. And I love that character. Jamie, by God, Noble.
Molly Holly.
again, another person who is a personal favorite of mine. Loved her wrestling. She had done like a dark match or something as Starla Sexton or something like that.
Yeah.
And she was a little bit, needed to get in a little bit TV shape. So she did. But her wrestling was always there. What a smart girl. What a good person.
Kevin, your Rangers just tied the game with 28 seconds to go.
I love it.
Reverend Devon.
We all know the story. Both of Devon's parents were ministers growing up. When he was growing up, he grew up in the church. Testify. That's where that all came from. Is that the reason to put the habit on him, or whatever they call the what? The habit is what the nuns wear. What's what the priests wear? Come on, Scott. You were an altar boy.
A collar.
He's still an altar boy.
Isn't there a fancier name than collar?
Stole.
Jostle. No.
Collar is what Triple H made Scott wear.
Jossible.
You're a fucking heathen. You really are a heathen. Unbelievable. Talking about Catholicism and he's got to be dirty.
Catholicism is dirty, but go ahead.
Anyway, so the collar.
Oh, hell.
Again, that's the literal translation of what they needed to do. We're splitting them up. We've split them up. We know Bubba can play the piano and he can juggle. Great. And we know Devon was a, you know, his parents were ministers. Great. Got it. You know. And had they put Batista with him yet?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was neat. That was a good opportunity for the deacon. Yeah. Everybody loved Deacon Dave.
Booker T and Goldust.
Had they done the, was this where we were getting to the Tourette's thing?
No, not yet. Here they were just starting. Goldust was trying to be his buddy and talk him out of the NWO. They were just starting to kind of do the, I don't think they had done the movie stuff yet either. They had just really, they did the thing where Goldust had the woman lure Booker to the hotel room and then he's in the bed with the lingerie on trying to talk him out of the NWO.
Anything that, you know, to where Hollywood writers get involved, I hate it. But I enjoyed the chemistry that those two guys had.
And finally, Billy and Chuck.
I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Worked well together.
They sure did. I thought it was a great team. I think Billy Gunn's one of the most underrated wrestlers of all time. Was what they did good? Was it, you know, where they were getting to? Had they done the gay thing yet? Had they done the Modern Family wedding yet? Or
no, that was later.
That wasn't for a while.
Okay.
For a few.
Here they were still just kind of teasing.
No, coming out with the terry cloth robes and.
Yeah, that was fine. I don't know. Chuck Palumbo's a badass, legit. So,
yeah, he builds motorcycles or cars or whatever.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy.
Right.
I did love.
Where was he from, JR?
West Warwick.
Right.
Cross street from your house.
I did love when they did the pose down, like the bikini pose down with Tori and was it Tori and Stacy? I think it was. And they had the little like porn music playing. And they were both taking turns doing like the posing.
It was Tori and Stacy.
Yeah, this was getting to be that era where you couldn't, you know, my kids really couldn't watch wrestling anymore.
Just now at this point?
Oh, really?
Made it through the Attitude Era?
No, they weren't allowed to watch television during the Attitude Era either.
Okay. All right, Scott, I'm going to grab this next one because this is kind of my theory here that we've talked about on the show.
Okay.
Kevin, do you believe WrestleMania officially began the transition to the nostalgia era in general? Kids in the 90s were kind of reaching the age where they start looking back at their childhood, leading to the shift in company booking and marketing, more DVDs and merchandise. They embraced history, brought back older guys. Was that this something in pop culture in general? Did you feel like they were actually kind of on the, instead of lagging, they were actually kind of at the beginning of that forefront where, you know, websites start to come out, 90s kids, 80s kids, and we all started embracing what we loved. And I think that was a big part of why Hogan got hot again.
Yes to all of those things. They'd flipped the fan base. And when you flip the fan base, then it makes them nostalgic for what they used to have a while ago. The kids who had come out of the Attitude Era were now the aged fans who were on the cusp of walking away from the product altogether. But we can be nostalgic for where our journey began as pro wrestling fans when we were kids. We got back into wrestling when we were teenagers and we were in college through the Attitude Era. Now we can look back to when Hogan was champ and it was cool and it was the first time and we had ice cream bars and LJN figures. And that's where the nostalgia really began. So, yes, it was the process of turning the fan base over made the nostalgia era work.
Do you think that carried over into all pop culture at that time?
Well, I mean, look at where we are now. You can't create anything new, so we're going to make best ofs. We're going to make, you know, we're going to do all of these different things.
I feel like that's when it started. Like, that's when a lot of that, you know, VH1, you know, I Love the 90s, and like all that. I feel like we started looking back fondly on those days more at that point. We started getting a lot more retro.
Yeah, we had throwback jerseys. We had all kinds of different things. Nostalgia night. There's, yes, that may have been. Now, was that where a lot of this had begun? Or did Hulk Hogan bring that about? Did the return of Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels bring about the move toward recognizing history and nostalgia? And they were starting to become sentimental about The Undertaker by this point as well.
I thought Hogan was a big part of it in culture. I mean, Hogan coming back and, you know, my whole generation that was just turning 19, 20, 21, 22, you know, finishing college, about to kind of become an adult, but move out of college, start in the workforce and everything else. It really started to feel more like they were all latching on to Hogan, trying to get back to their childhood again. And you know, I told the story when we talked about WrestleMania 18. We had a WrestleMania 18 party in my dorm room. It was on St. Patrick's Day, and everyone just flipping their shit in there. I mean, we packed the dorm room, just going crazy for Hogan. And they were, some people left upset when he lost, actually, that match. And I feel like that was the start of it. That was the start of that flip away from the attitude and the anger, looking back now more fondly on the days gone by.
Yeah, but then we got into an era that was like porn, you know, in the mid-2000s. So it was just gross. I hated it. Was the person who got mad and left, was that one John Stategius?
No, he didn't like Hogan's work rate, I don't think so.
Did I pronounce his last name correctly?
Stegeekus.
Yeah. I threw it in.
By the way, I need to PlayStation.com on the YouTube page. I do have his Tough Enough 1 tryout video, so I'm going to have to post that for everyone.
We must see that.
Yes, I helped. We filmed that one together. It was quite the masterpiece, I think.
That's it. He's pissed. Throwing down my water bottle and I'm leaving.
Get the Mexicans out of here.
Yeah, I think nostalgia comes in waves, no doubt about it. But certainly where this era was with, 2002, yeah, everybody started looking fondly back.
I'll grab these last two, JR, since okay. You went back to back. Through these first 6 months of 2002, we've talked about this roster and the additions and everything. Combination of good workers and big names. Was this the most loaded the roster had ever been?
I think it was the most bloated the roster had ever been. It was huge. And they weren't drawn. Business had really slid off the table by this point. All of the sins of the brand extension or the sins of the invasion angle failing really came home to roost here, and they did not have enough live events to support a roster of this size. So what you wound up with was a lot of guys on TV who were struggling for time to have long matches, to get over, to do what they needed to do, to be the focal point, and we were doing anything we could to try to find something for them to do. So a lot of guys didn't get over, and a lot of names from the past got caught up in the wake of the nostalgia, which was lightning in a bottle for Hogan. And they still had you know, business to do when it came to the title and all the underneath stuff and all the other matches. And that's a reason why a lot of guys from this era just didn't get over. And it was, it kind of sucked.
And in terms of all the comings and goings and just everything that happened with the plane ride, I mean, was this the most tumultuous run in the history of the company?
I think if I asked Jim Ross, who was the head of talent relations at the time, was this the toughest roster to manage? I think he would agree with me. So many strong personalities and guys coming over from another company and not really sure how they fit in. And, you know, business starting to really just trend downward drastically and dramatically. So guys were, you know, having, I'm sure, strongly worded discussions about their pay. And at the same time, you know, a real partying crew being together on the road. And just a bad set of combination of factors. This was where the begins, you know, again, all through the Attitude Era, business was so hot domestically that we never had to go on European tours. The traditional springtime post-WrestleMania European tour had been replaced. And, you know, a couple of shots over in England wasn't going to hurt anybody because it was one show. And, you know, so this is where we start going to start doing some of these tours. And now you start to put some of the veteran guys that are used to the WCW way of doing things and they could get away with this stuff. It wasn't going to work in the WWF. That and changing the whole name of the company, for God's sakes. Yeah, very tumultuous.
All right, Kevin Kelly, you made it into halfway through 2002. I want to appreciate you coming by. I want to thank you for doing so. Always good to have you here. We will next talk to you next Wednesday evening, next episode, what are you up to, episode 10, I think?
10.
Yeah.
Wow.
Double digits.
I was just about to say that. 320 more to go to catch you guys.
We're almost there. Sean Grandy will be in the house, like we said earlier, the play-by-play voice of the Boston Celtics, longtime diehard wrestling fan, knows his stuff, knows the old school stuff, and he can hang with anyone in a wrestling conversation, so that should be a lot of fun.
We'll put together some thought-provoking questions, but I want to talk to him about LeBron James and whether or not the women in San Antonio are really fat, like Charles Barkley said. And if Sean Grandy has had any run-ins with any of those oversized mamacitas down there on the Riverwalk. These are the questions I'm going to ask Sean Grandy next week on the Kevin Kelly Show with Justin Rosario.
And we can talk about the Hornets coming back as well.
You'll just be, you know, batching all over yourself talking about it. Oh, the Hornets.
All right. Steve Corino show also will be out Friday. Interviewed Frankie DeFalco, of course, longtime wrestler, now a promoter. Steve will interview him and, of course, answer all your Twitter questions and whatnot as well. So stay tuned to PlaySimulation.com for all your favorite podcasts, all your favorite articles. And, of course, Scott, we'll be back Monday night. We'll have Vengeance 2002. And then Wednesday, episode 10, Kevin Kelly Show and the main event. So until then, for Kevin and Scott, I am Justin. Everyone take care. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. We'll talk to you Monday night from Vengeance. That's it. I'm funny.
What, me?
This girl's softball pitcher is named Sydney Littlejohn right now. Softball game I have on.
That's not right.
No feline run in either, Kevin.
That's what he was eating. It wasn't pretzels.
Yeah, that's it. Asking who want it. You got it, nigga, flaunt it. That Brooklyn bullshit, we on it. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. I guess that's why they're broken, you're so mean. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. I guess that's why they're broken, you're so mean. I put hoes in NY onto DKNY. Miami, D.C., prefer Versace. That's right. All Philly hoes know it's Moschino. Every cutie with a booty, boy, the coochie. Now who's the real dookie?
meaning who's really the shit? Them niggas ride dicks. Frank White pushed the stick called the Lexus LX, 4.5. Bulletproof glass tips if I want some ass. Gon' blast squeeze first, ask questions last. That's how most of these so-called gangsters pass. At last, a nigga rapping about blunts and broads, tits and bras, menage a trois, sex and expensive cars. I still leave you on the pavement. Condo paid for, no car payment. At my arraignment, no for the plaintiff. Your daughter's tied up in the Brooklyn basement. Face it, not guilty. That's how I stay still. Richer than rich, so you niggas come and get me.
Come on. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so fake. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so fake.
I can fill you with real millionaire shit. That's cargo, my cargo. 160, swiftly. Wreck it by your new one. Your crew run, run, run. Your crew run, run. I know you sick of this. Main brand, nigga with flows. Girl, say he sweet like licorice. So get with this, nigga, it's easy. Girlfriend, here's a bit. Call me round 10, come through, have sex on rough, that's Persian.
That's right.
Come up to your job, hit you while you're working. For certain, pop a freaking, not speaking. Leave their ass leaking like rapper demo. Tell them move, take their clothes off slowly. Kill them with the force like Kobe. Dick black like Kobe, watch me roam like Roman. Lucky they don't owe me, where to say, show me,
say
homie.
Homie.
Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so fake. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so fake. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so fake. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so fake. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so fake.